You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey listeners, we want to thank you for being loyal the last 3 years. Your support has made the switch to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network possible. This is going to open us up to bring even more content your way on the audio and the written side. Keep following and listening. Hook 'em or hunt 'em. Pro Talk Outdoors.
That's what I call Pro Talk. When you really don't know the answer, you just make it up.
My rut is that I am in a rut.
To get the pilot of Red Arrow going. This is really a way to skip class.
I want to say, hey, those boys right there are entertainers.
There you go.
That's the nicest thing anybody's ever said on this podcast.
Alex Rutledge here with American Roots Outdoors TV.
Hey, this is Lee and Tiffany Lukowski from the Crest TV.
Hi, I'm Don Higgins.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
Hey, everybody, this is Mark Drury with Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Craig Fitz of Trained Assassins TV. You're listening to Dave and JP on Pro Talk Outdoors, the craziest two I know.
There's no harder time on a whitetail's body than the dead of winter. Temps are at their lowest, and so is available forage. Does have to have that added bump to get fawns through to spring, and bucks could use the jump to restart antler growth. There's no time like the present to get supplemental feed back out on your farm if the state allows. Whether that's Maximizer with EHD technology, Maximizer Plus, or Complete Feed, you can have an impact. Shoot us a message or visit www.realworldwildlifeproducts.com for more info.
Hey folks, welcome back to Pro Talk Outdoors, and tonight we're going to dive deep again, and we've got a real special guest online here with us, a guy that anybody that's real serious, especially about public land hunting, is going to know a little bit about, and got the Hunting Beast Forum. He's the Hunting Beast. He's the Big Buck Serial Killer himself, Mr. Dan Infault online. How you doing, Dan?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing just fine. I can't say that I've had a great season or anything, but, you know, it's winding down for us a little bit here, but I guess it's time to regroup and see what the heck we did wrong. But how was your season for you?
I had a similar season. I got onto some deer, but not the one I was looking for.
Well, it happens. I know it's a good time to regroup and kind of take a step back and see what the heck happened, I guess. But I got Jason Campbell here online with us and Wyatt Rivers, and really, these two guys, I have to tell you this, Dan, this is going to be a big education for me, because my public land hunting and really my style of hunting doesn't match up with what you do. And I'm going to learn a lot from you here tonight, but Jason in particular has done a whole lot of, I don't know if you want to call it emulating, but I know he follows a lot of the stuff you do, and really interested here in seeing what we can learn from you.
Cool.
So, yeah, Dan, first off, let's just kind of start at the basics, you know, just kind of cover what exactly beast-style hunting is for the people that may not know. And how long have you been doing? Has this been something that you've been doing, like, your entire life? And how did you exactly come to figuring it out?
That's right. I've been doing this my whole life. And I think, if you want to call it a benefit that I have, is that I didn't have any mentors. I kind of started hunting on my own. And I didn't have anybody to teach me bad habits. And back in those days, you didn't have all the magazines, all the literature, the online stuff, you know. So you just had to go out and kind of learn. And I didn't learn anybody's bad habits. I didn't have anything passed down from generations above. And I just started noticing that, you know, the closer you got to bedding, the better your hunts were, you know, the more you saw in daylight. And I kept pushing those envelopes, and, you know, it just clicked.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. So you say you didn't have any mentors or anything. What made you decide that you wanted to become a deer hunter then?
Well, everybody pretty much deer hunted back then. And, mm-hmm. and my father didn't hunt with me because he was working two jobs, you know, to support us. I mean, it was different times. My brothers were, you know, off fighting in Vietnam, and, you know, I was on my own.
Right.
But we didn't have much money and stuff, and in those days it was more about food, you know, and because of that I killed a lot of deer. I killed them for meat, and I think that's important. You know, a lot of guys nowadays start out as wanting to be trophy hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's really hard to jump right into hunting, killing big bucks.
You got to learn
how to kill deer first. I mean, because it's not as easy as they walk by and you shoot them. Everything you do, they can bust you on. You know, and mature bucks are, as you know, Jason, are experts at catching you, you know.
And when you least expect it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Going from there, like when you're talking bedding area, you hunt a lot of like marshes and swampy areas. Is that correct?
Yeah, I hunt all different terrains. I hunt all over the place, but I'm probably best known for my swamp hunting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, one question I have that I've never really heard: what type of footwear are you using to get back in there? Do you use rubber boots or waders or?
I usually use rubber boots. Mm-hmm. Waders are so hard to walk in, I just get wet because, if you try to avoid it, it's just going to make your walk harder, and you're going to get wet anyway. Sometimes if I know I'm going to get wet, I literally just wear tennis shoes.
Right,
having a boot full of water is no fun.
No, it's not. I've sunk up to my waist a few times, and it's definitely not fun, especially, you know, trying to lug around heavy boots. You got to find somewhere to take them off.
Yeah, there's little tricks you can use. Like, I like to pull my outer pants out over the top of my boot, and I find that if you go through, if you pull your foot back out fast enough, the water doesn't get through the cloth that fast.
Well, I got to ask this question. So if you're going back in these marshes, and you're going back in tennis shoes or even boots, whatever, and your feet are getting wet, I mean, do you not freeze your feet? I mean, your feet's got to freeze, man. How do you battle that?
Yeah, it gets pretty cold. Outside of, below 20, I mean, it really doesn't bother me. I just get used to it. You know, I don't hunt for long hours either. I mean, the mature bucks on these public lands most of the times don't move much in, you know, broad daylight. So I'm hunting the last couple hours of the day or the first hour or something, you know. And the rest of the time I'm just scouting anyways.
So are you waiting till later? Like, say you got an afternoon hunt and you've got a big buck kind of pinned or where you think he's bedded at. Are you waiting till 2 hours before it gets dark before you even approach, or how are you getting in there?
Well, it depends. I mean, ideally, in some situations, you'd like to get there a little earlier so that, you know, especially if you know something's going to happen, because or in certain situations where the buck might hear you or something, because the earlier you get there, the more lethargic he's going to be in his bed. But in a lot of cases, you know, I'm hunting after work and stuff, so I'm getting out there later.
All right, I want to take a step back. All right, so I want to ask this question: how do you identify areas where a big buck is bedded at, and when are you identifying those locations?
You know, that's a wide open question, because there's a million things you use to identify those bedding areas. The DVDs I've done, six DVDs on the subject now, and I got about 20 to go before I cover every type of bedding scenario that they have. The trouble is, really, explaining it over the phone kind of is that when you walk into those areas, you know, say I go down hunting in Iowa, I mean, some of the stuff down there wouldn't hold a jackrabbit here, but it holds a booner there. So it's really the best cover you have for your terrain. You know what I'm saying? So in these swamps, really, I'm looking for some features. I'm looking for, number one, areas where people don't go. That's number one. Because they will not, you know, mature bucks will not hang out where they smell people constantly. Number two, I'm looking for certain land features that are within those areas where people don't go. Going back to where people don't go, I'm looking at a property and I'm saying, okay, this is generally what people do. They go to the big wood lots. They go look for the stuff that looks like what you see when you turn on the outdoor channel. You know, I'm looking for open areas, stuff to the side, stuff alongside the road, little patches of brush and stuff, because bucks really don't, the mature bucks really don't live in the middle of those big woods or woodlots where everybody hunts. And if they did, they wouldn't live to the age that they live to. They're more on the edges and in the openings. Then when I find those areas where I think that those bucks live, I'm keen in on land features. Now, if we're going to swamps, I'm going to say it's going to be on little points of brush, a little patch of dogwood. If you're in cattails, it's going to be the edge of the cattails, or there was a couple trees in the cattails, a little island in the cattails. But it's really, you can take a look at a swamp and look at that transition line of where the water meets the woods, and that's where the deer are going to be, just inside that water for the most part. They're not going to be a mile in there, and they're not going to be up in the dry land. They really like to be in swamps, in water, but on dry land, so surrounded by water, you know, for escape and for to keep people from getting to them. You remember, coyotes and wolves don't even go through the water. And, you know, when I go out and hunt these swamps, I know it's a little different by Jason. Those people in Michigan get a little hardcore. But around here, once you hit 2 inches of water, you don't see people, period. You know, but you go up on a dry land and there's, you know, an orange outfit during gun season every 50 feet. So those bucks are all in them swamps, you know, in those little high humps. And a lot of people don't even realize it, but when you get back in those cattails, so there's just networks of trails and bedding areas.
So are you... You're not even concentrating on food or anything. You're just basically, most of the time, you're looking at identifying buck bedding areas, and you're keying on those, and then you're kind of going off of that and figuring out where you need to set up at?
Well, obviously food and stuff like that is taken into account. But number one is bedding. Absolutely. I mean, it's real long, 3 miles to go to food. But
right.
He has to, a mature buck has to have secure bedding. So, you know, some bedding areas key in on food. I mean, you might have a really good bedding area that, you know, if you really look into it, it's only used like in September, maybe every other year. And you really, when you put your finger on it, it's because it's right next to a really good oak grove. You know, they're there when the acorns are there. You know, and you get bedding areas that are really focused on rut. You know, and you get some bedding areas that I call primary bedding areas that are great all year long, and bucks bedding there all the time.
And there's, I guess it just takes time to actually identify what's what. I mean, you got to really recognize the area and know what the food source is there, so you know if whether it's a September deal for the oak grove or whether it's a all year thing.
Yeah, you know, after you get in and you start doing this over and over and over again, and you really start putting on the mile scouting in the off season, this stuff starts getting more and more recognizable as you see it, and you can start looking at it and say, yeah, they're probably here because of those oaks. They're probably here because of the doe bedding area over here that's normally upwind. They're probably here because of this. Look at all the rubs in this bedding area. This has to be used in pre-rut. This one doesn't look like it's been used recently, you know, right after season, but it was used heavily at some point. Well, probably earlier in the season, right? This one doesn't have the cover to hold a buck in late season. It had to be being used during early season. You start putting the clues together. Look at how old the rubs are. Are the rubs fresher, you know, for later in the season, or are they real early season rubs that are already dull? There's a lot of clues to when they were bedding there. And the one thing that'll really put it, you know, two and two together is hunting it. I mean, after you throw some sits at these spots, you start seeing a pattern. And you'll see those patterns repeat over and over again. You know, I like to, if I'm real unsure about a bedding area, I'll throw 3 sits at it. I don't like to hunt any bedding area more than 3 times in a year, or the deer just vacated and find a new spot. But say I throw 1 sit at it early season, 1 sit at it rut, and 1 sit at it late season, and see what happens. And then figure out a plan from there.
Do you have something, White?
No, well, what I was going to say, you kind of already answered. I was going to say that I notice a lot the bedding area on the majority of the farms that I hunt, they change. Generally in the summer, most of the bucks are bedded around the ag and stuff like that, and we're in heavy ag country. But it's kind of it's weird where we're at. We kind of get a mix of you know, farm country and then some hill country type stuff. And then, you know, as the season progresses and the rut gets closer and stuff, they start bedding more on those hills, you know, downwind of the doe bedding areas. And then, you know, as late season comes around, then they kind of move back. And that's essentially what I was going to ask you. That's something that you notice quite a bit as well. But you already answered that. So.
All right, Dan, I got something for you. How do you, like, when you one of the areas that I hunt on public, I went and scouted it early season, and it was a marsh. I mean, 3-4 inches of water, you know, all over the place. And then going back in there, I went back in summertime, and it had all dried out. I mean, it was about waist-high grasses with just little ponds in there. Do you find that deer will adjust where they bed on that? Because when I was out there early season with all the water, it seemed like every little island that held trees had beds on it. And they seem to still stick right there around the little islands, right where the water was. Is that something that you see occasionally, or is that
I see water change bedding. I mean, for instance, one of the swamps that I hunt this year was real flooded the whole year. It's working on a dam system, and they raised the water level. So the water was higher in there. It was about a foot higher, and it brought the bucks up to higher ground, but they're still in the same areas.
Okay.
You know, another thing getting to that is, too, you go around a swamp, and let's say that the swamp behind my house here, it's about 3,200 acres. I could take you out there, and I could show you 300 bedding areas I know of. If you look at it and say, yeah, this is a bedding area, this looks good, I would set up here. But of those, there's five that if there's a big buck in that area, he's one of those five,
mm-hmm.
almost always. I mean, there's one bedding area I've killed 12 of my bucks out of.
Wow.
At the same tree, coming out of the same bed. And there's another one where I've killed about 16 good-sized bucks out of the same tree, same bedding area.
Man, that's amazing.
Wow.
And the rest are kind of spread out and slow. But those same spots, there's one area where I was having a lot of luck, and a guy moved into it,
mm-hmm.
found it, and you couldn't miss it if you got back there.
Right.
Because there's giant rubs come out of this bedding area.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy finds that, puts up a trail camera, takes a boat back there and puts up a tree stand and chains it to the tree, which is illegal here. And just, there's a beat trail going to this. So I get out there to hunt, sign that, and I just turn around and leave.
Mm-hmm.
I come back in spring to scout it. Stand's still there, the camera's still there, and there ain't a rub anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So no bucks came in and rubbed while he was there. So then the next year, he's there again. The next year, he was gone. I mean, obviously, he's not seeing anything. He's leaving, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he camped there. Everything just left.
Right.
It took about 2 seasons of nobody hunting there before those bucks came back, before I had mature bucks coming in here again.
So
a guy camping out in those spots and hunting those same trees over and over again will kill him. So even though I know there's trees, I know that if I go there, I'll probably get a shot.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to continually shoot big bucks, I got to have patience. And I got to really think about what I do before I do it and really just hit it on the prime day when I think it's going to be the best.
Now, when you talk about the prime day, are you looking at weather conditions as much as just wind direction? Are you waiting for like a high pressure system or a front moving through? Or is there anything you're kind of keying on?
One of these bedding areas... is a primary bedding area. It's got bucks in it all year. I've sat there early season, had bucks walk by, nice ones. And I've sat there late season, had bucks go by, and they're nice ones. And I've sat there rut and had nice ones go by. But what I've noticed is because of its proximity to a doe bedding area, something really big moves in there during rut. So I usually wait for that one for pre-rut. Matter of fact, I was hunting a real big buck in the marsh that... was living in a preserve across the street, but he would come over every now and then. And I knew that when rut came, he'd probably show up in there. But rather than guessing on it, I monitored the rub lines that go back there. And when the rub line opened up, I went in there and hunted. And the first day I hunted that spot, the first day I hunted that buck, I shot that buck on October 31st. He got up out of the exact bed I thought he'd be in and walked to me.
So are you looking more for rubs and stuff as opposed to scrapes or what? You know, what exactly are you?
Every sign has a reason and a place for it. I mean, it's not like I'm out there looking for rubs and scrapes and stuff. I'm looking for bedding areas where these big bucks bed.
Right.
And some of the bedding areas don't even really have rubs. I mean, honestly, you just have to know that a big buck beds there, and that's a difficult task to figure out. But once you get that down, then you know it. And sometimes it takes seeing the mature bucks in there to know it. I mean, I've had spots where I think it's an awesome spot, and I think, oh, man, I'm going to kill a buck here. And hunt 3-4 years and then just give up on it.
Right.
Never seen one. And I've had spots that look like, well, I ain't going to hunt that. But something comes up and you know there's a buck in the area and you go, oh, whatever. Wind's right for that and the other spot ain't going to work, so I'll just throw a stand at it. And also you start finding out that that's one of the best spots in the swamp. Sometimes you got to throw, a stand at it, and it's all guesswork to that. I mean, it's educated guesswork where you take a good guess at it and you think, this is what I think is going on here. But, you still got to go get your boots dirty to really know.
Mm-hmm.
But once you figure out a swamp and you figure out those bedding areas, they repeat themselves year after year after year.
Okay, I've got a question for you. Well, I already know the answer to it, but for some of the people that don't, since we're on the subject of sign, you have a very interesting theory about buck rubs and how to tell if one was made by a mature buck and one not so much. Could you go into a little bit of detail about that, about the height of them?
Yeah, I actually did some studies on that, too. Rub height seems to me to have a lot more to do with the size of a buck than diameter of tree.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen very young bucks rub pretty big diameter trees.
Mm-hmm.
Especially two-year-olds. But I've even seen a year-and-a-half-old Spike rub a tree that's as big around as my leg.
Mm-hmm.
But the mature bucks are quite a bit higher, taller.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch them rub, they rub like in line with their back. And what I see is that year-and-a-half-old rubs in the Midwest here, like Wisconsin or Michigan, are, below your knee.
Mm-hmm.
Two-year-olds start getting above your knee. A three-year-old gets above your waist high. And when it gets stomach high or higher, you're talking about a mature buck.
Wow.
Now, you got to take into account, I mean, if it's a little sapling, it could be bent over.
Right.
But if we're talking a tree that's going to, fight that deer a little bit, if you look where he's standing and it's as high as your belly to the center of the rub, not to the highest point, to the center of the rub, that's a mature buck.
That's interesting. I'd never even heard that before. It makes complete sense, but it's like it's kind of a simple thought there, but it makes complete sense. And I'm sure most people overlook that because, I'm one of those guys that always look at a rub, and if it's on a big diameter tree, I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's a giant. And it's not. But so, okay, do you utilize trail cameras at all, Dan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do.
So that, I mean, are you identifying, okay, let's say you know your buck bedding areas. You've established those. You know those well year after year. Are you going around, tell me how you utilize those trail cameras to identify what bucks you're going to go after and when?
Well, your common trail cameras I put on food sources or I put in travel routes or whatever, and all I want to do is see that there's a big buck in the area, one that I feel I want to target. And once I see that, then I go back to where the bedding areas are in the area, but my camera ain't there. However, I do use email cameras, and I put those right on the edges of bedding areas and let them soak for a long time and get a pattern of a buck coming in and out. Just recently, I'm hunting a buck in farm country that is on a small farm. He was there the last couple years in a row now I've hunted him. He never shows up till late season. And this year, right after gun season, I caught him on one of those food sources. And I know where the primary bedding area is on his property, but the property is tiny where I can hunt. So I don't want to go burn it out. So I took that camera in before a storm, and I put it right on the entrance and exit out of the bedding area. And I got a picture of that buck going into the bedding area in the morning, circling around to the downwind side. that evening I set up on him, and the wind got in there, and I'm thinking he caught me because the wind was just off, and it switched a little bit when I got in there, and I think he busted me because the camera had about 10 deer on it every day coming out of that bedding area, and the day I sat there, nothing came out, which is a good indicator I got busted, right? And now I'm just sitting back. I got another month to hunt him. I'm just sitting back waiting for him to be on that camera again. Not bothering the area. I'm staying out. He hasn't been back since the day I busted him.
All right, that brings up an interesting question here for me. So, I've heard some things about this, and I've read some things about this, but I don't know enough about this to even talk on the subject, but I'm certain you do. How do you identify the entries and the exits of a bedding area, and then also how to utilize those based on wind direction of where that bed that, you know, that deer may bed, or which way he may enter that bed or come out of that bed?
Okay. That's a huge subject.
I knew it was.
Yeah. More than one question there.
Right.
but let's talk about how they enter and exit a bed. Entry is a lot harder to figure out than exit. Because when they exit, they seem to exit the same way all the time. There'll be one to three, maybe four trails that come out of a bedding area. It's really nice when there's one. But the trails you see that are worn in, they got rub lines on them and stuff, that's your exit trails. Generally, when they enter those bedding areas, they circle to the downwind side, smell it first, and come in with the nose to the wind. And they smell the bedding area first. Then they turn around and they watch your back trail. So that's, as you can understand, that entrance varies a lot because they're going to come in exactly with the wind. And getting in there and busting them in the morning is pretty difficult because they're going to come in there usually, in a lot of the cases, before daylight. A lot of times when they bed, it's before it's even light out. And they're going to come in downwind to you. So the trick is to try to figure out where they J-hook to get in there and try to do it on a day that they come back late, whether it's because of rut or moon phase or whatever. But when they exit a bedding area, they just go from point A to point B.
Do you think when
and
they
that's more predictable.
Do you think when they exit, though, that has some play on the wind?
What's that?
Do you think when they exit, it has some play with the wind? Do you think that they exit, you know, with the wind kind of quarter?
I do not.
No?
I
okay.
do not. I hear that all the time, and I think there's reasons why people say that, but I don't think it's true. I think the reason is a lot of people believe that, so they set up for that. If that's what you set up for, that's what you're going to see. I do see that they don't go as far when they don't trust the wind. You know, like you don't get them to go, you know, like maybe if the wind's to their face, they go 200 yards.
Right.
And if it's not, maybe they go 100 yards in daylight, but they still go from point A to point B. They're going to go where they want to go. And if you're set up, you know, in the right spot, generally you're going to get a daylight shot anyways. The way I see it is if you look at where a buck beds, I said he got a safe zone around him where they think they know if anything penetrates that safe zone. And they're probably right. If you get inside of that, they're going to hear you, smell you, or see you. If you get inside this imaginary circle, right?
Right.
So what I want to be is right on the edge of that circle. Because that's where they're going to feel real free about walking in daylight. So you want to get right to the edge where they feel free about walking in daylight. And that's where I want to kill them.
That makes sense. And I'm sure that circle varies, you know, with each set and each year.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It varies, absolutely.
So is that, I mean, a general rule of thumb, are you thinking 100 yards is where you want to be? Or, I mean, can you even get that tight? Or is it just depending on the conditions?
Well, here's the thing. You know, again, it varies in terrain. If you're talking swamp, most of the time I'm within 100 yards of the bedded buck. In a lot of cases, I watch them get out of their beds. But when you're talking hill country or timber or farm, a lot of times you can't get that close. A lot of times I'm 200 yards. Sometimes I can't even get close enough. You're just out of that range. But, you know, that's the things you got to take into account. Where you're hunting makes a huge difference. A That's one of the things I like about swamps is you can get rid of topping things.
Now, when you're hunting in hill country, one thing, how do you decide if you're going to like set up, say, above them or below them? Is there any, what factors go into deciding that?
The biggest factor that goes into deciding that is which way I think they're going to go, mm-hmm. based on food, does, or whatever they're traveling to.
Gotcha.
I much prefer them rising. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to get below them and kill them.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the thermals and the eyesight and everything else, I mean, they're looking downhill. When they're bedding hill country, they're bedding with the wind coming over the hill.
Right.
At that top, they're right where the ground just starts to drop off steep is where they're going to lay. And they're going to have a good view of downhill. And they're going to have the thermals pulling up all day until that last magic hour when that shade's down there and the thermals start to turn. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard to get below them. You have to get out of sight. So you're going to probably have to be like 400 yards from them if you're below them, or you're going to have to be around an obstacle, mm-hmm. like a little rise in that, you know, goes up and down or something. But above them, you can get pretty close on those bucks. The hardest part is the sound because there's usually dry leaves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get that crunching. But you can get to, you know, when they're bedded on a point like that, you can look at how the wind's going across that point, and you get to one side or the other, and you can hunt them. But then you got to pick the right side that they're moving on. And that takes, you know, some scouting, really. It mm-hmm. takes you to go through there and look at how they're coming in and out of those beds, look at the trails, decide on a setup, and then sometime in the future come back when the wind's right and set up on that.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about scouting. How important is scouting to you? I mean, like, I know you've been doing this forever. You know where bedding areas are and all, but somebody like just starting out, like this is my first year doing this, and I probably spent, I can't tell you how many hundreds of hours out there scouting. And like, how often do you try to get out and scout?
Well, I scout probably at this time of the year, I'm scouting probably 20, 25 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And during season when I'm hunting, I'm probably scouting as much as I'm hunting, if not more, because I'm cyber scouting when I'm home. Every time I drive someplace, I'm driving out of my way to go look at something or, mm-hmm. or whatever. But actually in the swamp, you know, I'm spending a lot of hours in that too. But any time of the year, the more scouting you put in, the better. And I would say it probably takes a good, you know, 3-to-1 ratio.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, three times the scouting that you hunt.
How
people overrate hunting. I mean, you gotta really, I look like I look at this farm stuff. Like, you go into farmland and bucks bed on the edge. They bed right on the edge of timber, and they watch the opening below them when the wind's blowing through the timber. So they get the wind coming through the timber to their back, and they're looking at the field in front of them. And 90% of your hunters will say, "Oh, the wind's perfect," and they'll walk right into the middle of that field and set up. And wonder why they don't see anything mature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of times, what's helped me in that farm country is to set back and get into a big tree that's not even where I can kill anything, or I'm parked on a hill with a spotting scope, just watching and see what comes out where, and then deciding how to go about it. You know, you gotta spend some time watching. You gotta spend some time scouting. You gotta spend some time learning in order to kill. Can't just run out there and kill all the time. I don't think people realize how much those bucks are set up to bust you. They don't get to be 5 or 6 years old by being stupid. I mean, there's just too much hunting pressure. They would die really quick if they were mm-hmm. stupid. They set up for you. They're watching you. They're monitoring you, and they're patterning you while you're trying to hunt them. And people think they're just dumb animals that go around randomly, bed wherever and do whatever, and it's just not true.
So if you're talking during in-season scouting, and you're talking like a 3-to-1 ratio, you're scouting three times as much as you're hunting, you're not just going out there.
Just take it like this. Look at it like this. I might have a destination in mind. I usually do. When I go out into like the public marsh, I got an area that I'm thinking I'm going to hunt there. The wind's right. I know that's a good spot. That's where I'm going. And then I'm looking at, okay, I'm not taking that straight line log and road path that everybody else takes to get out there. What's my best route of getting out there? What can I scout here where the wind's right for scouting and on my way to that spot? And on my way to my spot, I would say probably about, not quite half, maybe 40% of the time, I never make it to my destination. I hit hot sign and set up on it.
Now, how do you decide?
A lot of times I go into the woods without even a plan of where I'm going to sit. I just go scout a transition until I find hot sign.
Mm-hmm.
Going into potential bedding. If you remember now, if they're bedded on those edges, it's that easy. There's only a very small, you'd be looking at 6,000 acres.
Mm-hmm.
If the mature bucks are bedding on transition lines, they're not in the middle of the swamp, they're not in the middle of the woods. You could probably walk that whole transition in a couple of hours. You know, so you can really get on sign quick if that's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you decide, like, what sign to set up on and what to just walk past? Because I ran into that this year where I was going back into one of my spots kind of scouting as I went, like you said, and I wound up setting up on some fresh sign and didn't see anything. So how is that something that just comes with experience on you learn what to walk by and ignore and what to set up on, or how do you go about that?
Yeah, it does to a degree. I mean, I'm looking for big sign.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to remember, too, I mean, it's hunting.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I set up on that stuff, too, and I'm wrong.
Right.
I mean, if I killed a deer every time I went out there, I wouldn't have anything to talk about, right?
Wouldn't be fun anymore.
You know, most of the time we fail, mm-hmm. all of us, me included. I mean, 90% of the time you fail. But if you can take that 1 or 2% that you succeed and make it 4% versus everybody else's 1 or 2, you're doing something. You know what I mean? So you can't take those failures as failure. You learn from them. And like I said before, I mean, you go and you hunt those spots, and if they don't pan out, you don't go back.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you go back and you give them one or two more tries at different time periods and see what happens. But I'm looking for fresh sign, and I don't want to see old sign.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to see sign in the middle of a woods. I think most guys can't walk past a giant rub. They can't walk past
yep.
a car hood scrape. I mean, and it's evident, because when you walk on the woods, you see that stuff. And there's no sign anywhere where a deer could bed. And there's tree stands all around the giant rope.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes you laugh. You know, so those transitions, where you think that bucks would bed, the sign coming out of that. I mean, why else is a buck walking into a marsh full of water that dead ends at a lake where there's a patch of red brush in there? Why is that trail coming out of that? He's not going in there to wander around. So if there's trail coming out of that and it's got sign on it, fairly good chance that there's a buck that beds there and he's going to come out when you sit there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the kind of sign I'm looking for, where I have I believe in my mind, based on what I see, there's probably a buck bedding there that I would like to shoot. You know, maybe that's big tracks, maybe it's some rubs that are big and they're fresh. You know, I love to see rubs that are still a little tacky, you know, they were done in the last day or two. You know, another thing I like to see is, even more than rubs, is scrapes. Scrapes near bedding areas are really something. I've killed some of my biggest bucks over scrapes that are within 100 yards of a bedding area.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what you get with that, is that usually those scrapes that are really close to bedding areas are where two bucks that are bedding close to each other staged in the same spot, and they mark that. You know, and they're like competing against each other. They both go work that scrape.
All right. So, if what I'm hearing right, Dan, do you ever hunt out of like a hang-on set that you've just left there, or are you? I mean, you sound like you're extremely mobile all the time. Is that the way you hunt all the time?
No, it's not 100%, but it's most of the time. Yeah. I mean, I've on that little farm that I got. I mean, there's only so many trees, so I've got stands set up in trees. But the ones that I sit three times or so in a year are spots where you're not going to kill anything. You're watching the farm. When I move in for the kill, it's usually one time. Some of those stands never you can get hunted for several years, but they're not getting moved. I like where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
But 3 years might go by and I don't hunt them. You know, when I'm hunting the public swamps, before I told you about those great areas that I've killed all those bucks out of,
mm-hmm.
some of them I never even hunted last year. Never went back and hunted them. You know, I'm going around and I'm hunting a lot of times specific animals I'm floating around, but I don't really hunt the same spot twice unless I have a real good reason. I got to see a buck there or something and it gets by me somehow, or
mm-hmm.
or I'm not going back.
See,
you know.
That's interesting, because, like, you know, as it gets later in the season, you start kind of, you know, I consider my season this year a failure, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, successful in harvest. And I think that a big issue that I had was, you know, I got stand happy, and I hung a bunch of stands. I mean, I went into some areas that I probably shouldn't have, and I hung sets. And I think I blew some deer out that I probably, would have otherwise, had I been more mobile and just went in and did a hang and hunt kind of set, I would have been in much better shape. So can you...
Yeah, you gotta remember, like this, if you think about it, you know, you go walk in an area, I think your scent's there for like 10 days, 2 weeks, that a deer can smell that you've been there. You go in there and start cutting limbs and hanging stands and putting ladders up and stuff, I think you do a lot more damage than what you believe. I think you probably do. You probably got sent there from doing something like putting up a stand for a month, and I think mature bucks really, really key in on that. I mean, it might not be so much with smaller bucks and does and stuff, but that's not what you're really hunting. Even if that's what you're taking, it's not what you're hoping for. And those mature bucks key in on that. They smell that. They know you've been there, and they move around you. And now let's just backdoor once and let me be the. You for a second and ask you a question.
Okay.
What's your biggest buck?
My biggest buck is 154 gross.
How many times did you hunt the tree that you shot that out of?
Twice.
What's that?
Twice. Two times.
Twice, yeah.
Yep.
And most of the time when you're hunting a stand, how many times have you sat in that stand?
Oh, gosh.
Probably many, right?
Yeah, I'm guilty.
Well, I can tell you this. Just about everybody I ask when they got their biggest buck, probably 90% of the people I ask will tell me, well, it's the first time I ever sat that spot. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, well, the first time in's the best. You know, you're not getting in there and screwing it right up before you capitalize on it.
Yeah, and most guys tell me that they hunt these stands over and over and over again, but the one time they moved over here and they killed this giant buck.
Yeah, and I can tell
but
you...
they don't put that together. They don't put that together and say, you know what, that's how I got to hunt.
Yeah, I can tell you from experience, that's true.
Where your stands are. They know where your stands are. What was that, Jason?
I said, I can tell you from experience, that's true. That's one of the reasons, that's the main reason I switched over and tried to hunt in public ground this year. Is I hunted the same two probably 40-acre farms, and I mean, I was just in and out of the same stands every single day. And I tell you, this year when I switched to public land and moving around, being mobile and not hunting the same spot more than two or three times, I saw more deer, more quality deer this year than I have in probably the past 3 years combined.
Well, okay, so, and this is something I've been giving some serious thought to, Dan, and it's, you know, it's really the main reason that I wanted to talk to you and reach out to you and have you on the podcast. I am very interested in kind of looking at my entire hunting approach totally different, you know, and kind of going to a more mobile type approach. And with that, you know, I need to have a hang and hunt kind of mind frame. And I'm thinking, is a saddle right for me? What kind of stand is right for me? What kind of steps, should I get? I've been Googling all kinds of stuff and YouTube and things, and I'm thinking, do I want some of those, I don't even know what they're called. They're like those spiky boots or whatever, or you're climbing those trees. I'm thinking, man, I'll just probably hurt myself with those. But can you run down what is your – what are you packing in when you're going in to do a hanging hunt?
My ideal situation is to have a nice small stand and five short sticks. Now, obviously, I make my own equipment. I think everybody knows that by now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But so I developed it the way I wanted it. But I got a small stand, and I got five sticks, and I got it really lightweight because sometimes I'm back 2 miles or whatever. It's got to be quiet. Everything's bungeed solid together so it doesn't make noise, doesn't rattle kind of thing. And I do not want a climber because I do not want to be limited to straight, limbless trees. And in some areas, they work okay, like hilly terrain where it's all wooded and it's mature woods. But even then, you're gonna hit a spot where you're not going to be in the tree you want. And if you dial into how I pick a tree, you'd understand that more. When I go into a spot, I rarely, even if I've hunted a spot several times, it's not too often I hunt the same tree. And the reason for that is I'm getting in that close quarters. I'm looking at how the trail's going through, you know, where the sign has moved to or shifted, how the deer's coming out a little different or whatever. And I'm looking at exactly what the wind's doing. And I'm sitting back from a distance and picking a tree. A spot I got got to be based on what I think the thermals are doing and going to do and what the wind is doing. And then I'm looking at the tree and I'm looking up it for cover and figuring out how high I got to be in the cover. Now, if that tree's got limbs on it, I got to be in the wrong tree if I got a climber.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I can get to any tree I want if I got something more mobile. Then I got enough sticks. Even though I usually use 3 or 4 sticks, I've always got 5 with me. Because when I need them, I want them. And again, now say I'm going to a tree that I know I can use a climber in. Go back to my scouting, my way in. Now I find sign of a giant buck. Oh, man, look at what's coming through here. But I got to get a portable to get into this tree.
Mm-hmm.
So I leave and I come back the next day. Well, while I was gone, that buck came through, smelled I was there, and he ain't back. He ain't coming back.
Wow.
I need to be able to get in that tree that day. So I need a hang-on stand with sticks is what I need.
And I'm assuming that you're probably trying to pick locations where you don't have to do much trimming at all. You're probably trying to do it on as low impact approach as you can and not trimming any shooting lanes while you're there, you know.
Yeah,
I'm
like I said, I'm 50 to 100 yards from that deer.
Right.
I get that saw, I'd cut one limb, he's gone, mm-hmm. or he just ain't going to move till dark.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm just being patient about my shots.
What about not just your tree stand and your step setup? What are you packing in with you? What's your gear bag look like when you're going in on these?
I usually got boots and a pair of pants.
Well, I'm glad you're wearing pants with your tennis shoes, right?
Yeah, Dan, they got a chuckle out of me. I've watched you enough to know that you're very minimalist when you go in.
Yeah.
I
got milkweed, a bow rope, a knife, and a flashlight, and if I'm somewhere really remote, maybe a compass. Otherwise, it's just my bow, my stand, and I got a camera arm because I film. Mm-hmm. But that's it.
Yeah, that's, I mean...
I don't carry lunch in there. I don't carry water in. I don't carry anything else. I go in there to kill. I got one thing to do there. I don't need binoculars and all that crap, cluttering up, making noise, flashing. I just want to be... like Jason said, as little stuff as possible. And you see these guys that go out hunting, and you wonder what the heck they got a backpack. Are they going camping for the weekend? Or
Wyatt's over here pointing to himself.
I go on a week long camping trip. I take less stuff than some people take on a 4-hour hunt.
Yeah, we got a guy sitting at the table that is guilty of that.
Yeah, Wyatt's over here blushing.
Yeah, yeah.
But so, what kind of camera arm are you using?
I developed my own on that too because I want something good for mobile. So I've got one. I developed it. I sell it. I don't advertise it much because it's hard to keep up with the orders. But
I'm gonna say, yeah, your sticks have been just selling like hotcakes. I want to congratulate you on that. By the way, I'll say I've tried the last 2 times you've had a limited stock available. I tried to order some, but I mean, it seems like a matter of hours those things are gone.
Yeah, we can't get anybody that can manufacture them fast mm-hmm. enough. So,
well, I mean, that's a good problem to have.
I think we'll get it down by the end of the year. So by next fall, we should be able to get ahead of orders, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Now, is your stand, is that going to be available to the public anytime in the future?
Yeah, I developed the small stand. It's completely done. I we've been hunting out of it, and it's awesome. We got it to the point where I just love it.
Yeah, I see sneak peeks in your videos of it all the time, and I'm just like, man, I want to see the whole thing, though.
Are you going to be at the ATA show by any chance?
No, I'm not planning on it. No.
No. Okay. I didn't know if that was something we could see.
People beating me up now about having this stuff out.
I hear you there. So, yeah, also, I guess this is a question that these guys, we were talking about in the truck before we started recording. What kind of shirt you got on right now, Dan?
What kind of shirt?
Yeah.
What kind of shirt you wearing right now?
I'm wearing a shirt that has Trump on it standing on top of a tank.
I love it.
Jumping through a fire.
I love it.
Nice.
You have the greatest collection of T-shirts I possibly have ever seen in my life, and I want to thank you. That always brings a smile to my face when I watch a video of you.
Hey, this is an odd request right here, Dan, but can you take a selfie of you wearing that shirt and send it to my phone? I want to see that.
Oh, I'll do that.
Oh,
sure.
Man.
Did it just get a little weird all of a sudden here?
Oh, just switch gears a little bit, Dan. I want to go into a little bit of a storytelling mode. I know as much as you hunt public land, you have had to see some absolutely off-the-wall crazy stuff. Is there one story that might stick out in your head more than others about just some crazy guy you ran into or just some weird, odd thing that happened out there?
You know, bizarre stuff happens all the time. Sometimes you think if you pull anybody, nobody'd believe you, but... I don't know, probably, one time in the marsh by my house, I found a, skeleton of a ram about 2 miles back in the cattails. Wonder how it got back there and died.
Well,
I ran into a guy, on the other end of the swamp. I went in there, hunting, and this guy was camped out real close to the entrance. So I got to go around this guy, you know, and it's kind of a funnel, so you got to kind of walk right past him. And the guy gives me a look, like shrugs his shoulders and looks at me like, really? But behind him is 3 miles of swamp, and he's blocking the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I go around him and just ignore him, and I get about 100 yards past him, and I catch my bow on some brush, and I just yank it, because I'm an animal. I know I shouldn't, but I did. I yanked it. And what was happening was a little limb off some dogwood or something got stuck in the string, between the string and the cam, and I didn't realize it when I yanked.
Oh, no.
It popped the string off the cam.
Oh.
So I'm sitting there with an unstrung bow. I'm like, oh.
Gotta go back by the guy.
Right? So I walk back past him, and the guy's like, really? I don't even look at him. I just keep walking. I get back by my truck, and I'm looking at this thing. I'm like, ah. I take the thing and I pry it up in my bumper of my truck and hang on the front of it, and I was able to string it. I'm like, I'm going back out there. So I throw an arrow into some mud, and I make sure the thing's still on. And I walk back past this guy, and he goes, I know who you are. You know about that buck. You're out here trying to get that buck on me. You're just going to screw up my hunt. So this guy thought, he knows who I am. And he thought I was just out there trying to screw up his hunt. And I guess I can't blame him, but that guy's probably still going out there going, yeah, that guy's an ass.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's great.
You know, he's telling everybody his Dan Infault story.
Exactly. Yep. Oh, wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. Oh, man. Speaking of, one more thing that I have, one question kind of related to that, is since you're talking about other people, do you find that sometimes, like the areas you're hunting way back in there, does the deer hunting only get better the more pressure that goes in around it?
You know, some places get better from the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the deep spots get better. But I really don't see that much of a difference. Here's what I mean by that. Like, there's certain spots I know, I can think of one island offhand, that there is generally, you know, a big buck out there. Anytime I go out there's a big buck hanging on that island. But if I go out there right after, you know, like 2 weeks of pheasant season's been going on and everybody's been going through the brush and the white side of the cattails and stuff, chasing these stupid birds around, I will see tons and tons of deer. Mm-hmm. But there'll still be one big buck out there. It seems like the younger ones are more adept to the pressure. And those bigger ones are already in those pockets. Those bigger ones are already avoiding the people.
Mm-hmm.
They're already hanging in those spots where people don't go.
It makes perfect sense.
But I get more deer back there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say some of the younger ones I wouldn't shoot. I mean, we get 2.5-year-old bucks out here that are 140 class.
Right.
You know, we got exceptional genetics. But that's not really my target animal, you know. So I think the pressure probably helps you a little bit in those spots, even with the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
But I really don't see that much of a difference like everybody kind of tries to portray it.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like those big ones are always out there.
Okay.
Interesting. I guess, man, any other advice you could think of for a newbie like me that, you know, just because I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna totally change my approach.
The biggest advice I could give you is to stop thinking about it like deer hunting. Start thinking about it like these deer are on to you. They know they're being hunted. They know where they're being hunted. And if you were them, where would you hide? Where would you go where nobody goes? And that's where you're going to find the biggest stuff. I mean, it's in oddball spots that if you know, you wouldn't want your neighbor to see you there because he'd be making fun of you for the next 6 months. You wouldn't want somebody to know to see you there, you know. It's the off-the-wall stuff, and the biggest bucks I've shot have been in the craziest locations because nobody ever goes there, and he's gotten a free pass for the last 4 years living there. Some of the biggest ones I've got have been 200 yards from a parking lot, you know, right next to where everybody goes, and you see the people go in, but nobody hunts that spot. Hmm. You know, and that's what you got to do, is think about where would they hide where nobody goes. You got to remember, too, people think like vision-oriented. They think about everything through their eyes. And like say you're walking through the woods, and if you ever killed a bear, you know they got a certain odor. So you smell that odor. Like you smell a bear. Would you believe it? You're kind of like, ah, I don't know, it smells like a bear.
Right.
But what does it take for you to believe it? You got to see it, right?
Yeah, you got to see it. With
a deer, it's the total opposite. They think with their nose. So they can see you, but they got to smell you. You know what I mean? That everything revolves around their nose. So if you think about where everybody walks and goes and stuff, deer know that. They smell that. They smell where you've been days after you've been there. They're going to go to the spots where they don't smell people, probably where they don't smell coyotes and stuff too, or dogs. You know, they might cross your path in a certain spot or something. But where they hole up in their bed, they're going to be where nobody goes. And the reason I'm killing bucks in those spots is because nobody goes there. So if I go camp out there, what's going to happen?
The bucks are no longer going to be there.
Right. So that's why this whole approach of just barely touching these spots and not burning them out, not overhunting them, that's why I'm hunting like that.
All right, let me ask you this. I mean, I think I kind of know your answer before you even give this to me, but what kind of scent control do you go through? Or are you just not worried about that at all? Or you're just like, I'm playing the wind and that's it?
I don't believe there's anything you can do that'll beat a deer's nose.
That's what I thought you were going to
say. I don't think there's anything that'll make them think that you're further away. I don't believe any of that. I've had deer when I'm wearing my shop clothes and my work boots hunting because I just got off of work, and it's either hunt or go home and change and not hunt. And I've had deer directly downwind of me, even mature bucks, that don't care. And I've had deer that get downwind of you and freak out. So, I mean, I've tried the stuff. I've observed the stuff. I got friends who use the stuff. It just don't work. I don't believe in it. I don't believe it one bit.
Gotta respect. You know, that's kind of funny because I'm hearing there's along with you, there's a few other really, really good big buck killers that have said the exact same thing. And I gotta start thinking.
Look at Andre Diacquisto. He's got more Boone and Crockett's with a bow than anybody else in the world. He hunts out of leather boots.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess if there's one thing I've learned tonight in this podcast, Dan, is that I really don't know what the hell I'm doing. I've been deer hunting for almost 30 years, and I don't have a clue. I've just been doing it all wrong.
It is a whole other way of looking at it and thinking, and, I mean, it really opened my eyes to it. I've learned more this year than I can't tell you than I thought I'd ever learn about deer. And, I mean, I really, honestly, I have all – you to thank for all that, you know. I mean, I've learned so much from you just watching your videos and listening to every podcast you've ever been on. And I mean, really, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. It's been it's probably been my best year I've ever had. And I killed one buck in Kentucky on public land, and Indiana's kind of, you know, haven't done too great in Indiana, but I mean, it's still it'll go down as probably one of my favorite years hunting for sure.
I appreciate that. I think too. You know, a lot of guys will hear this, and they'll get the gist, and then they'll go out, and they'll go scout, and then they'll find some sign on a bedding area or something and think they got it made.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's a lot more work than it sounds like.
Yes, it really is.
Anybody who's doing it can tell you have to be a little obsessed and like the hard work. You got to like the work of it. You got to like the scouting, not just the killing. And I think everybody who's successful doing what I do is more into the scouting and stuff than the killing. The killing's kind of anticlimactic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting to the point now where I don't even want to kill someone that walks by, or my season's done, you know.
Yeah.
Or I better pack up for another state because I don't want to quit hunting, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of, do you do a lot of out-of-state hunting, or do you really just try to stay local with your job and all that?
I've been staying local the last few years, but I'm going to try and expand it more this year. I'm hoping that I can try and take this to a full-time business this year. I don't know if I'll be able to or not. We're trying to crunch the numbers. Mm-hmm. But if I can, then I'm going to do a hell of a lot more out-of-state hunting.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I hope if you do, you make it down to southern Indiana sometime. I'd love to meet up with you and go go run around some river bottoms and stuff.
Yeah, that'd be fun. So.
Well, Dan, or I guess maybe I should start off with Jason. You got anything else? Any thoughts?
I don't. Like I said, I really, really appreciate you taking the time and talking with us, man. It has been a really amazing, and I feel very fortunate that to be asked to come on here and have the opportunity to talk to you and pick your brain a little bit.
Wyatt, you got anything?
Well, I always like talking deer.
Well, Dan, greatly appreciate it, and I know that our listeners are going to appreciate all the information that you've been willing to give us tonight. And if you would go ahead and plug your whatever you want to plug, whether it's I don't know if you want more business, but how do we go and find out where we can buy these sticks and stands when you sell them and all that good stuff.
Yeah. The sticks and stands I'll avoid a little bit because I'm having a hard time keeping up. But you'll hear about them shortly. But you can follow me on my website, which is a hunting forum called The Hunting Beast, thehuntingbeast.com. And I'm on Facebook as The Hunting Beast. And I think my biggest attraction is my YouTube page. I've got a lot of good videos in there that teach the tactics that we've been talking about, or show hunts that are successful using those tactics. That's really popular and growing pretty fast.
Outstanding. Well, Dan, greatly appreciate it, man. And if there's anything we can do to help you at any point in time, don't hesitate. Reach out.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.
All right. Have a good one, Dan.